Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
me. A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that? Problem?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
This is Tech Talk. We've got Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM. And you know what? It's just half of the Tech Talk crew today. Just me. That's what you got to put up with. Sorry about that. Everybody that loves Dave, myself included, we're going to be without him. He's gone again this week. But that's okay. You know what? We have got such a great show lined up anyways. I'm not going to say you're not going to miss him, but we'll manage to struggle through and get some great info out to you anyways. We've got Jay Garman, of course, coming on to answer our geek trivia question from, goodness gracious, how long ago was it? I don't even know anymore. 3 weeks ago or something. Fantastic question. He'll be answering that for us and giving us something new to think about in just a little bit. And then on top of that, if that wasn't enough for you, I've also got Eric Ginsberg, who is with the company BookSwim, and he's going to talk to us about why and how our traditional paper books competing and still vital and alive out there, even with everything all you're hearing about right now is the Kindle, this, and the iPad, that, and the Nook over here. Well, you know what? He's here to tell us a different story about why traditional paperback and hardcover books are still going to be doing the dance for quite some time. So I'm interested to hear that and hear what's going on with that. I hope you are too. And of course, as always, we'll have the cool sights of the week and the podcast only song of the week if you're listening to this recorded, which you can find, by the way, anytime you want to, techtalk.wrlr.fm, and go through there. No triple dub required for our website. And also too, you can of course do a quick search on iTunes and find us and download us that way if you are one of those iPadders, iPodders, iPhoners, and all that good stuff. Now, interestingly, we'll kick right into some news here. Since I'm on the topic of Apple here, which we seem to wind up there somehow one way or the other, just more frequently than I would prefer, Apple recently just kind of came out with their report for the SEC talking about what their current earnings are, what their expected earnings are going to be. And interestingly, they have said that they don't expect that losing the exclusive contract that they have with Apple on the iPhone is going to cause them any problems. That's right. AT&T is losing their exclusive deal. It's probably going to be sometime later this year. Expectation is that Verizon will be one of the first ones that'll pick up those iPhone contracts, and we'll start selling that. That probably by the time the iPhone 5 comes out, which should be, you know, late spring of next year, 2011, that we're going to see that under a different contract deal, that you could actually go with Verizon for that as opposed to AT&T. AT&T, of course, has been under a lot of pressure and a lot of pain because of perceived service issues, let's say. There's a gap in what people desire and what they're actually getting in terms of the connectivity with their iPhones, which is a really big deal, of course, because you got a smartphone, it's ballyhooed, is all this beautiful, wonderful stuff that you can do online, and then you can't get online, or even worse, you can't even make a simple phone call. And you know, these are still phones, people, don't forget about that. They do a lot of other stuff, but we still want to use them at phones occasionally. So that was kind of interesting. We'll see how that actually plays out. Now they might be right. You know, if you look at just saying, hey, we're not losing any money when the iPhone goes to other deals, as long as they're able to somehow supplement that or supplant the money that's been coming in through that. I think it's going to be pretty tough, though, to find a replacement for that iPhone. It's been exceptionally successful for them. In similar news here about big companies and changes in big companies, I don't know if you've heard this yet. This literally just popped, I would say, this morning or last night. Mark Hurd, H-U-R-D, he is the CEO of HP, or I should say he was the CEO of HP. He has recently just been forced to not continue his contract. He was in negotiations for a three-year, $100 million contract with HP. He's been really, really successful at turning HP around, making things happen with them, to the dismay of a lot of workers for HP, because the way that he did that was through cutting costs and cutting jobs and all sorts of other things. These are things, though, that needed to happen and were obviously the correct thing to do for the company's livelihood, because the company's stock has just taken off. They've actually done very well, even through the deepest, darkest periods of the recession. HP has really held on to their own. Well, even though he was successful at that, you know, there's just some things you can't do. And he's tendered his resignation now. And the quote is, as a result of an investigation regarding claims of sexual harassment from a former, not even from an HP rep or employee direct, but from a marketing contractor, an HP marketing contractor. Now, so far there's been no evidence of any sort of actual sexual or intimate contact or anything like this, not even really any deep dirt on the harassment charge itself, which of course could progress to a criminal stage, or at least certainly to a civil case. There hasn't been enough evidence of that, but what there was dirt about the way that Hurd was filing expenses and expense reports, and that these were being done in a manner that were intended to conceal his relationship with the contractor. Essentially, he was coming up with reasons to take trips and go to dinners and things like this, but that these were falsified on his expense reports to say that these were all business-related expenses, and in reality, maybe not so much. He just was kind of having a good time there, and now he's paying the price for that good time, which is too bad. Like I said, he's been very very good for the company, but this definitely violates HP's standards of business conduct, and I think they're doing the right thing here. You don't want to take chances with that. Current HP CFO Kathy Lezak, she's going to take on the role for interim CEO, and we'll see what happens with that. I doubt that she'll continue for any length of time. I know unemployment is pretty high still, so there's got to be a few people out there that'd be interested in that job, right? You know, I mean, heck, I don't even need what would it be, 33, 34 million a year? Pay me 15 million a year, I'll take the reins. It will be just fine. We'll be just fine. I can't guarantee you'll get the same quality of service, but I'll give it a go. So is anybody over there at HP looking for a new CEO? Give me a call. Speaking of people in the news who are, you know, paying the consequences for their actions, usually we're talking about spammers and hackers and things like this. All these guys going to jail for getting busted and finally getting nailed, and our internal sense of justice is strong for those. Well, you know what? We got another guy here, network admin Terry Childs. just got sentenced. Now, you might remember him. He was the San Francisco City Network Administrator. And when he felt he got a bum rush on his job and a bad deal out of what was happening there with the city, working with the city, he left and then flat out refused to hand over the administrative passwords that he had to the entire city's network. And there was a lot of downtime, and there was outages, and there was issues. They were trying to reset passwords across the systems. And, well, you know what? He was convicted in April of violating California's hacking laws. And basically, the FiberWAN network itself, which helped to run a lot of the equipment, not networking equipment specifically, but equipment that ran the city utility grid, he just wouldn't give those up. And it really, really caused a lot of problem. He denied the city administrative control to its own network, and that falls under those hacking laws. And yes, he just received 4 years in jail. Now, he's already spent over 2 years in jail. So I believe that's going to be time served is going to be covered. The other thing that he may have to do, which this is going to be a little tough maybe for this guy who spent the last 2 years in jail. He's got another two to go. He may have to cover the city's $900,000 bill, which was spent on regaining control of the network. They've got a hearing on that coming next week, so we'll see. Boy, oh boy. You know, if you're in IT and you've got control of somebody's network, you know, I hope this makes you think twice. And I'm in IT, and you know, I think even the best of us, you get those moments where, you know, a boss just does you wrong, or somebody somewhere is not making, or you leave, and it, you know, even if you would normally leave under good circumstances, something just keeps you from doing it, and there's just that animosity, and you're like, you know, oh, I've got my fingers on everything. They don't know. They don't realize how important I am to this place. You should think twice before actually doing anything, because this is a good case in point, as to what can happen when you take action on those base impulses. And Terry Childs certainly is seeing the results of that. So that's not a happy case, but I guess a something for all of us to think about a little bit. You know what? I'm going to hit one more quick story before we try to bring on Mr. Jay Garman. I wanted to mention there's been something. I actually saw his speech on CNN, and then now he's reporting and written a little blurb. Our good friend from Saturday Night Live fame, Al Franken. You may remember him from that. He's now. This is tough. This is really tough for me to say. Senator Al Franken is now. He was elected to senator back in July of 2009 after the gobs and gobs of controversy and recounts and hours of time spent because of. Not gonna get into that. He is now taking a stand on net neutrality. Of all things, for some reason, and is weighing in on it. And Mr. Franken, Senator Franken, is a fantastic speaker. Obviously, I mean, he's, you know, Saturday Night Live and improv, very good. He's an excellent writer, too. And not only that, but he's pretty well thought in his ideas. And I was initially very impressed with some of the points that he made, some of the thoughts that he came up with, and some of the things that he presented in his speech in particular, but also in his article online in CNN. It's one of those things. I think I've expressed on air before. You know, my stance is that I think that enforcing net neutrality, using government to force private companies to administer their networks and their equipment in a specific manner, is in the long run going to be very deleterious to the state of affairs for those individual companies, but also to ultimately for the consumer. That means you and me. Al Franken feels very differently. He thinks that the, or I should say Senator Franken, let's say it's tough for me to say that. Senator Franken feels very differently. He thinks that it is government's role specifically to tell private companies how that they should distribute the bandwidth and distribute the product that they are providing to the consumer. And he's putting it into a First Amendment framework, which I think is a little bit misguided. He's comparing it really to the idea of saying that, an editor of a newspaper, for example, would go through and say, well, this article is more or less important and so should be closer or actually, you know what? I'm sorry. That's exactly the problem, is he's not looking at it in that way. He's looking at it in the way of getting on the expressway and saying, well, if you don't pay a special toll, well, wait a second, that doesn't work either. So how is he thinking about it? I tell you, you got to read the article. You read it quick and it makes sense and you say, okay, yeah, you have to have an open marketplace and product distribution. But no, if you really think about it, it doesn't make sense. You can't enforce, allow the companies to enforce their own decisions on how that bandwidth is going to be used, particularly when you start looking at the way that packets are being distributed today to give us the high quality, high def video that we want so desperately. Yeah, maybe that should get a higher priority on the bandwidth than somebody downloading an email, where if they have to wait an extra 15 milliseconds, it may not matter. Whereas somebody listening to Lady Gaga's latest streaming album is going to be kind of bothered by the stutters and judders that happen because Frank down the street wants to download a 150 gig torrent of something. You know, these are the kind of things that aren't being taken into account in Senator Franken's article. Like I said, it is on CNN right now. If you go in, it's under the accurately enough under the opinion area in CNN. And I would say definitely go take a look and check that out and see what you think about it. I'd be very curious to hear your opinion. Send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm. Let me know what's about net neutrality, and we can even get it on. You can get it on air. If you leave me a voicemail, 847-984-0847, I will put it on air. Hey, speaking of on air, let's see if we can actually hustle this up a little bit. I'm falling behind on time again, as always, of course. Without Dave here to crack the whip on me, we're falling just a bit behind. I'm not even sure if Jay'll remember. I did text him this morning, but...
Hello?
Oh, we've got him. Good morning.
At long last.
It worked. It's alive. So
the miracles of technology have not betrayed us for once.
No, I'm overjoyed. I'm flying solo today, so I'm excited to get you going. Of course, because of that, without Dave cracking the whip on me, I'm like about 3-4 minutes behind schedule here. But I'm glad we. How's life been? How have things been going? It's been a while.
It's been warm. It's been a little warm outside.
Yeah.
We've had a heat wave here in town, so, you know, that's sort of been my life. Trying not to sweat, just walking between the house and the car.
yep. Yeah, it hasn't been so so pleasant here either, and we're having the typical battle of the I like it at 67, 68. My wife likes it at 69, 70. And then we get the utility bill, and I'm thinking, hey, you know, 70's not so bad. So...
I'm talking to a guy that keeps it on a nice, balmy 76, because I'm really cheap.
Ooh, wow. No, I like to give the excuse that I grew up in Minnesota, so it,
But that covers a multitude of eccentricities, I'm told.
It's true.
So,
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, with the heat and everything, and it's been pretty good. We've got we haven't had a lot of excitement here. We had those couple of weeks off. I was up in Minnesota and off of the grid, which was a little tough to do. But happy to be back and all that good stuff. We still got to talk a little bit about the upcoming sci-fi conventions in Easter time, and so I'm waiting to hear information about that.
Well, we have locked down our date for Easter. We're still working on guests, but we haven't announced our host hotel yet. The locals here are getting a little antsy because we are in the process. The hotel is going to be nice enough to give us our own special booking code. Ooh. So that our guests will be able to get discounted rates at the hotel. And the more of those nights that we book, the less the convention pays in terms of convention space, so it's a win-win for everybody. So we don't want to announce the hotel because someone's going to jump the gun and then go book on Travelocity and then find out they could have gotten it cheaper. And oh, by the way, we don't get credit for that, so we're keeping that under our hats. But it is going to be Easter weekend, and we are working on some guests, and I've been kind of going a little nutty in the nerd blogosphere promoting this thing, and in fact, I've turned over some of the programming duties to fandom at large. I'm partnering with a blog called sfsignal.com, some great guys out of Houston.
Yeah.
That I've known for years, and John DiNardo and JP France are the two main guys, and they're just awesome. And so I'm blogging about the convention there, and as suggestions come in from the internet, we act on them and are publishing that out there. So it's kind of going to be an open source convention, and on top of that, we're going to try something really insane, and thanks to a wonderful person named Cheryl Morgan, who's sort of an activist for online and offline fandom and an author, she's put me in touch with some foreign conventions that are also going to be Easter weekend. I won't name them yet because I haven't asked them if it's okay I name drop them. Mm-hmm. But it's entirely possible that these other conventions and I are going to coordinate some online guest sharing, meaning we're going to get on TalkBox and we're going to share our guests transatlantically and transpacifically.
Oh, cool. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Man, and TalkBox, by the way, is a great product. We actually had the CEO of TalkBox on here I am gonna name drop a while ago, and it's awesome. If anybody hasn't used it, it's a great video conferencing system that's free.
Well, you know, we looked into it, and I didn't know you guys had them on, but they're the only ones I could find that would do multi-party video conferencing for free. Like, Skype doesn't do multi-party. If you want to do video, it's one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several others that will do free one-to-one, but almost nobody else will even do more than one-to-one with video. And TalkBox is the only one that will do one-to-one, more than one-to-one for free. And from what I've been reading on their site, they'll do 20-to-20 for free. Like, their free tier, you can have 20 video-to-video participants, which is just blows my mind.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
they won on that spark.
I was never able to test it to that degree. I honestly don't have 20 friends, so it was. I was lucky to get one other person to agree to actually try it, so I could bring. Yeah, Nick Triantos is the CEO. At least I think it was about 2.5-3 years ago, shortly after they got started up, and really nice guy, and just a great service. Very cool. Thanks. So awesome. Well, as soon as you release the hotels, I think I've just about got my wife fully convinced that the word fun may not come into the conversation for her while she's there, at least tolerable is approaching there for her. So
we will find things for her to do, even if they're not involving the convention. We'll figure that out for you guys. If you guys want to come down, we'd be glad to have you in and all the Castlerlings.
Awesome.
You know, we'll make some time for that. And if you could figure out someone to do the show by remote, we'd be glad to accommodate that as well.
Yeah, that I think that would be the that would be awesome. That would be very cool. Even if we wind up having to just record it and rebroadcast it later, I think that would be a blast. Although being able to do the live feed would be really awesome. And you know, and Mary and the kids had a great time when we were in Louisville a couple of years ago for Thanksgiving and all that. So they've got an idea that at least there's, you know, it's not going to backwoods Kentucky. There's stuff to do. There's things to get up
to. It's a real city and everything. We got a million people here. You know, you wouldn't think that. Now the rest of the state hates us because we're a real city and we don't fit in with the rest of them. But you know, it actually happens. We got tall buildings and the whole nine yards.
Yep, absolutely. And they've got electric lights too. So
yeah, and we wear shoes even out inside them. It's amazing.
Oh man! Well, keep me in the loop on it, Jay. I'm gonna hurry us along here because I do have a guest coming on in about 5 minutes. We're gonna have actually Eric Ginsberg from Bookswim. He's gonna talk about why actual books are still going to survive even though nobody's talking about them anymore. So I think
a lot of people still own vinyl records. So you know,
exactly. Well, I think he's convinced they're not gonna be just a tiny niche part of the market still. I think much as vinyl records sadly are. But so I'm gonna bring us along. I know I've actually got it, believe it or not, I'm actually organized today. I've got the question from whenever the heck it was. The geek trivia question was, what Silicon Valley legend creates custom yet still legitimate versions of US currency?
All right, and it should come as no surprise that the answer is Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple and noted prankster and Looney Tune.
Mm-hmm.
And what Woz does is that, and anyone could do this, is you can go to coin collector shops or contact the U.S. Mint directly, and you can buy uncut sheets of $1, $2, or $5 bills. They will give you just a complete pressed plate off of the, not a plate, but a sheet, an uncut sheet off the mint press, and you can buy them for a novelty, but they cost more than the face value, so it's a little bit discouraged. Well, what he does, because he loves $2 bills or nice little conversation pieces, he buys just stacks and stacks of these uncut $2 bills and hands them over to a printer who cuts them into groups of four, perforates between the quartets, and then binds them into little coupon books, which he carries around and then tears off to tip people because he's Steve Wozniak.
Yes.
And he does this because he likes to see the reaction when people think those can't be real. And people that know him, the waitresses of the restaurants he frequents and so on and so forth, they know he does this and so on and so forth. And they're real bills, or he's not marred any identifying marks or anything. It's glue bound, so the glue doesn't obscure, and the perforations are on the edges, so it's totally legal. But he sits there and has and can tear off 1 to 4 $2 bills per sheet.
Wow.
And this got him into trouble at one point, as you might expect, when his daughter was in a gymnastics competition in Vegas, and he tried to pass these off to a waitress at a casino who, you know, casinos are a little touchy about potential counterfeit bills.
Yeah.
And so he had to explain himself to a pit boss and a casino manager at one point. And, you know, I don't know exactly what came of that. He blogged about it, but and then they pass all the counterfeit tests that you on the pen and whatnot you have right there. And then I think once they realized who he was, they're like, well, even if this is counterfeit, we know he's good for it because, you know, he's Steve Wozniak. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to it's tough to think the guy's just going to pull a runner, you know, and given his
especially
general...
if you've seen him, he ain't going real fast.
he did okay on Dancing with the Stars there, but yeah, he's not known for his speed, that's for sure.
Yeah, so Woz is the answer for the guy that makes his own novelty versions of legal U.S. tender.
Awesome.
Which you can still spend. So if anybody else wants to go to the trouble of doing this, but he did the math at one point, and basically for him, he's basically spending about $3 for every $2 he tips. So it's not cost effective. He's just doing it for the entertainment value.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely would be a conversation starter. No question about it. Yeah, well, and, you know, and that shows some, I think that shows some of the what makes the Woz is that, you know, he didn't just do it once and say, well, that was fun. he just keeps on doing it.
Yes. It is part of the Woz mythos.
Exactly. So what should we be thinking about for next week? Oh, you know what? Well, actually, I take that back. Not for next week. For 3 weeks from now, because I'm going to be out the next 2 weeks as well. I should let people know. I'm going off to Wisconsin of all places, and once again we'll be off the grid. So I'm disconnecting myself for a little while.
We'll just check in once a month and see how this goes.
You know, I like that. Let's we'll make it a monthly thing. No. Well, once fall comes along, we're back on our regular schedule.
All right. Once the kids are back in school and some sanity returns to our lives.
Exactly.
All right. Well, for those that don't know, Wi-Fi technology is based on a whole series of underlying patents. And one of the key patents that makes Wi-Fi connectivity possible is held in part by a Golden Age Hollywood actress. There is an actress who was also a math savant, who in the 1940s patented some technology for a broad spectrum radio broadcasts. So the question is, what Golden Age Hollywood actress holds a patent which is key to the development of Wi-Fi technology?
Wow. That's a good one. That is a good one. Oh. Man, and somebody you would not expect would be not just someone involved in Hollywood, but a woman involved in Hollywood, and then in that period of time, actually.
Yeah, in the 1940s, yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That is not one people are going to probably, if you hadn't heard it, you're not going to know it off the top of your head, I don't think. I should mention that Customer Jones did answer last trivia question correctly again, I believe. And she's,
well, I'm here mostly to entertain her.
Yes.
So.
she's still in contact and still on top of things, and we love hearing from her. Jay, we love hearing from you too. But I'm gonna move us along and try to be respectful to the next guest and get us going along. I will be in contact, and we'll wait a little while, but give some people some time to check that geek trivia question out. And of course, they can always go to jaygarman.net to find out what else you're up to.
Absolutely. All right. I'll see you in 3 weeks, buddy.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks, Jay.
Take care.
And as always, fantastic hearing from Jay Garman. Eric Ginsburg is going to be on in just a minute. Eric, if you're listening, I apologize right now for our delay. We've got to do some couple of spots, take a quick break. We will be back within 2 minutes, so stay tuned. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, and we're going to have Eric Ginsburg of BookSwim on in just 2.5 minutes.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
Listen to Life Outside the Box Mondays from 9 to 11 a.m. with your transition, magician, and babiars. Learn how to go from where you are to where you want to be. Again, that's Mondays from 9 to 11 exclusively on WRLR 98.3 FM.
All Custom Electronics Incorporated offers service for all of your audio and video needs. Surround yourself with many audio and video possibilities. Dream a system and All Custom Electronics Incorporated can put it together. They have many brands of equipment available. Their services include installation of in-wall, in-ceiling, surround sound, home theater, and commercial electronic sound systems. Also, multi-room audio, video, and low voltage systems. All Custom Electronics Incorporated is a proud sponsor of WRLR and assisted with the design and building of WRLR studios. They have over 14 years of experience to help you design and build your dream sound system. All Custom Electronics can be reached at 847-254-1234 or at allcustomelectronics.com.
The Lake County Journals cover what matters most to you. Local news, sports, weather, and entertainment are in print each week and updated often online at lakecountyjournals.com. You can look to both to find out more about your community and your neighbors. At lakecountyjournals.com, there are interactive videos and photo galleries. or even a place to post your comment about a story. Lake County Journals and LakeCountyJournals.com, your life connected.
Oh, we're back. Okay, let me do this here. We're going to try and give Eric Ginsburg a call right away. Well, I said if you're listening, Eric, already, I apologize for the delay. And of course, I'm hoping to...
Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ginsburg.
Good morning.
Hey, you are on the air, Tech Talk, with WRLR. I apologize. I was just telling listeners we're running behind. My co-host and producer are not here, so no one's here to crack the whip on me and keep me in line. But we've still got a good amount of time to talk. Hey, I've been telling people you're with Book Swim, but I haven't explained exactly what Book Swim is or what your role with them is. Before we jump into the meat of the discussion here, I'll let you run your own introduction.
Well, Book Swim is kind of like Netflix for books. The same online rental model that you're used to, where you can become a member and you can browse online, add everything that you like to read to your rental pool, and they come to you in the mail with no due dates and no late fees. We have everything from paperback classics all the way up to hardcover new releases. So it's just you've come to expect from the online rental model just for actual books, for people who like to hold actual books.
Actual books. And I think that's the question nowadays is, you know, what's going to happen with actual books? You know, Amazon just recently came out with reports saying that the e-books are outpacing sales of their hardcover books now. You know, are these still going to be around? Are we still going to be flipping paper in 5 years?
Well, you know, I think it's a really interesting statistic that Amazon came out with to say that they're selling more e-books than they are selling hardcover books. And what people think when they hear that is they're selling more e-books than tangible books. But if you listen closely, the phrase they used is hardcover. That does not include paperback. That's like saying that Timex is outselling Rolex. Of course, Timex is always going to outsell Rolex, and Honda is always going to sell more Civics than they're going to sell Acuras. But the fact of the matter is, the deluxe version is not going to necessarily go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hardcover is still priced pretty high, and I think in fact the average cost of a hardcover book is still higher than just a bit higher than the cost of an ebook at this point.
Well, actually, it's more than double. The average cost of a hardcover new release is $22, and that's an average, so it can range all the way up to $30 in a lot of cases, especially for the new releases. And then you're dealing with the fact that the ebooks cost usually about $10, but that is the same kind of fallacy as the $9.99 album on iTunes. You know, we all kind of got sold on this $10 price point, and so we expect it. But the fact of the matter is, it's an exemplar. It's not necessarily what every single one is. You know, on special deals, you can get albums on iTunes for $7.99, and plenty of albums there are $12.99 instead of $9.99. And they tell you, well, you know, but it's DRM free, so you're paying extra for us to not limit your use. And with the ebooks, you got two things going on. One, there are tons of free ones that are public domain or just promotional, tons of cheap ones that are less than $10, but also plenty that are all the way up to $17, $18, depending on what the book is. Now, the other side of that coin is that, another side of that coin I had it a second ago, and I feel like it's lost out of my brain right now. What just happened?
Well, you know,
I'm sorry, I forgot. The other side of that coin is that a lot of new releases are not immediately available as ebooks, and right now, more are than aren't, but as time goes on, you're going to see them, the publishing industry, that is, pushing the ebook further and further down the distribution chain. We're very comfortable already with the idea that despite the fact we heard the VCR was going to kill movie theater, movies come out in the theater, they do very well there, then they come out on Blu-ray, Then they come out, then they come out on available for rental, and then they're on the premium channels, and then they're on basic cable, and then they're on the network channels. So it works its way down, and that's where I think ebooks are really going to wind up, despite the fact that they have this great price, as you mentioned. You're not going to necessarily be able to get that until later, just like right now you can't get the less expensive paperback the same day as you can get the more expensive hardcover.
Yep. Yeah, and that's true, and I think there is a number of people that they're going to go right out, they're going to buy that Dan Brown or whatever it is that's thrilling them hardcover the instant it comes out. But most people, myself included, are generally willing to wait for the soft cover. You did bring up a couple of interesting things I want to hit on, though, in your analogies. One was about DRM in specific. We've also, too, kind of swallowed that bitter musical DRM pill, but it's a little tougher with the books and the ebooks, and it's a different it's kind of a different model. What do you see happening with that?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I think that as evil as we all feel DRM is for music, where we want to be able to put it on multiple devices and burn CDs and this and that, I think that DRM may be the best thing possible for ebooks moving forward, because you need some way to, and when I say that, please keep in mind that with the music, we were forced to take the DRM for the price point and then pay more, a $3 or so higher price point, a 30%, I guess, increase on the price point to get it without the DRM. But right now what we're getting with the books is without the DRM. They don't really know how to DRM these things yet. For those listeners who aren't really comfortable with the term, it's digital rights management. It's what allows users who have purchased an electronic file to use it on multiple devices. But I think that there is a great potential in the short-term use of an ebook, just like with BookSwim, there is the short-term use of the hardcover book or the paperback book, because, you know, BookSwim is in this really great position right now where, take Netflix, for example. They didn't necessarily get in the business of selling computers to every American home and developing broadband internet access all across these 50 states. What they did was they sat back, they waited for all these companies to put all the money in and make that happen, and then they made their content available through that stream. And BookSwim is in this really great position now as well, wherein we have Amazon, Google, Sony, Barnes & Noble sinking, you know, over $1 billion total into priming this market, getting an e-reader in every American's hands. Mm-hmm. To the point where then we will be able to swoop in just as Netflix did and make that content available for the short-term enjoyment for far less cost than paying the high premium of ownership, and I think that DRM will play a large part in that.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting point. Something that that occurred to me as well is that the ebook adoption and the e-reader adoption process is actually pushing this something that is actually very amenable to BookSwim's business model, is pushing the idea that, you know what, except in specific cases, we don't really need to have ownership of the book. We don't need to have ownership of the material. We really just need it for the period of time that we're going to consume it. And then when we're done with it, it's either just going to take up space on our shelves or, you know, go into landfill or whatever.
Exactly.
Do you think that we'll eventually get to a point where people no longer see books as being, these kind of monolithic sort of, you know, oh, I've got to have it and hold it and I'm going to save it for a generation until my children want this book?
Well, I think that the first half of that is not going to go away, but the second half really will. The half where we need to hold it in our hands and have that tactile experience is part of the joy of reading. And people don't really want to give that up, and I don't blame them. You know, there's something satisfying about cover art. There's something satisfying about seeing your left hand get lighter. I'm sorry, your left hand get heavier as your right hand gets lighter as you continue reading the book. There's something, you know, there's something very enjoyable about that and rewarding that you're not really going to get via a status bar like you have on the e-readers.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, we don't need to keep it forever. You know, we need to have it now, enjoy it now, use it now, but not necessarily take up the space. I mean, I will be very honest. I grew up in a household where our living room had one wall that was from you know, wall to wall bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And in my life, there was one small section of that entire bookshelf that had books that we actually went to as a resource. It's got the dictionary on it. It's got, you know, the Jewish Book of Why, and, you know, the things that we actually, and everything else are books that my mother or my stepfather bought at some point in their life, read at some point in their life, enjoyed or abandoned at some point in their life, that are just sitting there. They're just sitting there, taking up valuable real estate. And listen, I live in the suburbs. We have the space.
Yeah.
But so much of America lives in the city, and they don't have the space. And so to have that kind of, as you put it, monolithic bookshelf full of stuff you're never going to go back to, you're never going to touch again, it's really pointless.
Yep. Yeah, and I actually, in fact, fairly recently went through, we moved into a new house about 4 years ago, and one of the selling points to me was the office was covered with shelves for books, and brought all these in. I brought in all my books that I had, and finally said, you know what, let's not do this again, and went through and actually pulled the books that I honestly thought that I either might read again or that I might want one of my children to read at some point in their life, and just kept those. And it's still too much. It's still too many books, but at least I was able to get rid of those couple of crates. And you know, and I see that happen. One thing I want to mention, just taking us back one step, is that tactile connection to the material. And there's been a lot of recent studies done on comprehension and on in memory of information that we receive, and that it's actually easier for us to call back information that we've gotten from a hard copy source than it is from something that we see on a screen.
Absolutely. This is why we print things out to edit them, even though they're right there on the computer screen, and you can highlight and delete and cut and drag. You still want to have a pen on paper.
Yeah, especially editing stuff. There's something very satisfying about getting that red pen out and and scribbling over things to knock it out.
You're speaking to someone who is a part-time freelance book editor, so yes, there is something very satisfying about that.
you talked a little bit though too that I want to come back to that comparison with iTunes and the comparison with other forms of media, and I think one of the things that also was a learning experience for consumers, or maybe a learning experience more for the producers, was that there was a quality difference that people were willing to accept in music. You know, getting the 99-cent special off of iTunes is not the same as hearing that music on vinyl or hearing it even on a well-cut CD, but it was still acceptable for people for most of their listening. Do you think that there's a comparison or quality difference between ebooks, and do you think that's going to impact where people turn for their reading material?
Yes and no, and it's funny that you brought this up, and forgive me while I tell a little anecdote and ramble. Yesterday, I was sitting down with a guy named Bumblefoot, which for your listeners' edification, he is the lead guitarist of Guns N' Roses at present, and we were talking about exactly that, and I was saying how my birthday was Wednesday, and my girlfriend got me a suitcase record player. Which I now have sitting in my room, built-in speakers and everything. And I'm used to listening to music that was made for a record and then put onto CD and then turned into MP3 and then put onto my iPod and then through the headphone jack and the cassette converter into my tape deck in my car, played through my terrible stock car stereo. And this is not the way the music I'm listening to was intended to be listened to. So I sat down, Wednesday morning, on my birthday when I just got the record player, and I played Jungle Land, the first track off Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, on my iTunes through my, by all accounts, good speakers. Mm-hmm. And then I turned the record on directly next to it. And, the digital version doesn't even compare. It doesn't. It's not even close. There's something about that record. I was listening to Born to Run. I was listening to Harvest by Neil Young. It sounds like they're in the room next to you. Like they're right there sitting, singing to you. You know, there's really, once you get onto the CD, and Bumblefoot mentioned about that now all the music, there's no peaks and valleys. It's just one bar going flat across that everybody thinks is the Phil Spector wall of sound, but it's not. It's just noise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there is definitely 100%, I agree with you, a lot lost between a record and the 99-cent MP3. The 99-cent MP3 was designed to do two things. A, cut down on the theft, because at 99 cents you might as well buy it, and B, get people back into the habit of buying music, because they were at the point where buying a CD cost $18, and you only wanted the one song anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what was really pushing people to steal, to use peer-to-peer pirating of music. And so iTunes was kind of like a lesser evil. It was a compromise is what it was. It was never really intended, I feel, to become the way we as a culture consume music, though it has become that. And yes, I think that we have lost something from an audio perspective in that sense. So the other part of the question is, do I think the same thing is true for books? Not nearly. There's some loss, there is, and especially in the tactile and the holding the book and the feeling the pages, there is something lost there. In terms of, is the story less enjoyable? Are the words less legible? Are you not going to get as much out of it? No, unless, here's where I said not nearly, unless you're dealing with a book that is more visual than your average no pictures novel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There are, we tend to think of books, we think of novels. We think, about that time that we opened up the very first book we had assigned to us for summer reading that didn't have pictures, and we said to Mom, no fair. And ever since then, we've stopped thinking of books as having pictures, despite how many books we flip through every day that do have pictures. We don't really think of those the same way we think of books as novels. And the fact is, there is such a large percent of the publishing industry where there is a visual aspect to those books that you are not going to get at this stage in the game in an ebook.
Yeah.
Visually, they're not there. They get the text down pat. Absolutely great. But there's no color. So anything, a photography book, a recipe book, anything where you really want to see something, you're not going to. Okay. And anything, let me see. I do a little bit of work with the Princeton Review, and they have these books for test prep where there are, liner notes, and there are images, and there, and you can write in them, and you're never going to be able to get that out of an ebook where, A, you can write on it. They say, well, yeah, you can mark it up. It's not the same.
Yeah.
That's like using your cursor to highlight something. It's not actually helping you. Part of that tactile experience in a book, my girlfriend lends me a book, and she has written in all the margins about things that she liked and things that she thought, and it's almost it's almost invasion of privacy, because I almost feel like I'm reading a little bit of her diary when I read a book that she's handed me because of her notes on it. But that's the way she enjoys books.
Yeah.
Well, and she can't do that with an ebook.
Yeah, that's I've got to say that's one of the most valuable books that I have, as a matter of fact, is a book that my dad had when he was in college, and he took philosophy as a major. I was a philosophy major as well, and I actually went back and I used one of his books just so I didn't have to buy it myself.
Sure.
And using that book and discovering that there were marginalia throughout it of his thoughts and ideas and writing gave me a connection and an insight to him that I never in a million years could have had and would have had. And you're right, that doesn't exist with ebooks. And as much as you want to say, eventually they'll come up with a way to put, it's not going to be the same. It just can't come close to that tactile impression and having those notes written in there. And I'm sorry, Eric, I've got to pull us to a close here. I realize we started off late. I knew this was going to happen because I remembered enough from the last time we spoke that we were going to get into some great conversation, and we have. We'll have to do this again. This is a rich field of discussion that still lays ahead of us. I hope that it convinces people anyways, though, to give some thought before they go out and drop money on that ebook, and also to take a look at what is the exact website for BookSwim.
BookSwim is simply bookswim.com. That's book, S-W-I-M, as in so many books we're swimming in them.
Excellent. And of course you can find them at BookSwim on Twitter as well. So some really great stuff. Eric, thanks again so much for joining us. Real honor. I hope that we'll speak again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me again. I appreciate it. It's always fun to be on.
All right. Take care. And that was Eric Ginsberg, and we are pushing way at the limit. Boy, if Dave was here, he'd be giving me the angry face. I don't know if you've seen Dave's angry face. You don't want to see Dave's angry face. He'd also be tapping his watch. So you know what? I am going to, gosh, do I even have time for a cool site? I don't really have time. I definitely don't have time to run the cool site music. So I am going to give you one quick thing. Since we're talking about books, I wanted to bring it back to a special type of book, a book that maybe only used once every couple of years, but when you need it, my gosh, do you ever need it? That's user manuals, product manuals, owner manuals, all these things. They can, I hate having to keep them. We had a whole shelf and drawer full of them. It's terrible. Isn't that a pain? You know, you don't need it. And you only need it that one time every couple of years. So anyways, here's a place that I found that you can go and you can get these user manuals online in PDF format. Most of them are free, really easy to search through and look through for your dishwasher, for your home electronics, for, kitchen stuff, anything that you can be looking for. Take a look here first. It's called Retrievo, retrievo.com. Take a look in there. You'll have to search around a little bit to find it. I will, of course, put it up, though, on the cool sites of the week at techtalk.wrlr.fm. I'm going to leave you right now. If you're listening on podcast anyways, you are going to hear a song called Intelligent Tactile 101 by Jessica Hoop. If you're listening live, well, I'm going to kick you over into some more radio-friendly type of music, but do stay tuned. Great stuff coming on after me, and you are listening to WRLR 98.3. This is Tech Talk. Thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks and shouts out to Eric Ginsberg. What a great conversation and morning we had. And also, too, to our good friend Jay Garman. It was great to hear your voice again as well. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care.
there.